Red and I did a joint one, I'm sure that's
This is the 54th meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and on today's agenda is continued public hearing on the second sponsor substitute of House Bill 1, an act providing for the incorporation or annexation of all areas in the unorganized borough and providing for an effective date. On today we have a statewide teleconference with the western half of Alaska scheduled. That would be the portion west of the axis of the Parks Highway. In attendance are Representative Collins, Herman, Savacki, and Springer from the committee that constitutes a quorum. We also have in attendance the prime sponsor, Representative Larson. We have some terminals in line, and we also have made provision for toll-free call-ins, so those people that don't have easy access to an LIO office can be heard. And we proceed by going first to the people that are on offline standing by. Please, for the record, state your name and your address and whom you represent, yourself or any organization, so we can make sure that it gets into the record correctly. In Quinnarock, Larry Strang. Strang, is that correct?
Strunk, S-T-R-U-N-K. This is the City of Quinnarock, General Delivery, Quinnarock, 99655.
Yeah, go ahead, Larry. We read you loud and clear.
Also is our Mayor, Diana Sharp.
Okay, go ahead. Proceed with your testimony, please.
We have viewed this, and it appears to us that the unorganized or the second class cities in an unorganized borough would not be benefited so much, especially in our area where we have limited access to additional revenues, since native allotments cannot be taxed, and only in 1991 will land be able to be taxed, as we understand it. So we have very limited tax base.
Okay, is there anything else you want to add at this time?
Okay, this is Diana Sharp speaking. I'm the mayor of the City of Quinnahawk. This issue has been discussed thoroughly and completely over the past several years. One of the main concerns of the people of this area is a proposal for borough government to include large areas of boroughs, our cities, conglomerate large numbers of cities. If, for instance, they base that borough government on the rural attendance area, that would take in this area, it would take in 25 communities. The representation for each of those communities would become so watered down that the people feel that they would be misrepresented. In addition, as Larry Strunk has stated, our economic base for our borough government would be limited. In this area, where our sole source of economic development is in the fishery, and the salmon fishery has been so badly impacted by escapement and other issues over the past 5 or 6 years, the people don't have the money. If borough government came in, and in 1991 we had the capability of taxing those people, the people don't have the money to be able to pay for the land on which they sit.
Okay, thank you very much. Any comments from the committee or questions?
No, the only, this is Representative Ron Larson. The only comment I have now is, of course, within that REAA district, there's a school board. And basically what would be the change for the city of Quinnahock is that they would continue to exist as a second-class municipality, and that the REAA school board really would be changed to a borough assembly, exercising the three basic powers of education, planning and zoning, and taxation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Do you have any comment in regards to what Representative Larson had to say?
Yes, I certainly do. That is exactly what the people in this area have expressed. We have one representative for four communities on that rural attendance area board. That one representative is from another village, does not speak for this village, does not live in this village, does not spend any time in this village, and does not have any feeling for what the people in this particular community want, nor in any of the other villages that he represents, except the one village he's in. They represent you for a period of time, and they're totally out of touch. The only type of borough government that we would possibly be interested in is borough governments that we can establish on a smaller scale, such as for a group of three or four or five villages.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, on that point, of course, the type of borough government that would be established under House Bill 1 would be home rule, and that's where the people within that defined boundary would determine whether they'd have five representatives, or I guess our 35 representatives on their borough assembly, and that's one reason for the home rule type municipality, is to give the people of the local area that option to determine just how their local government will be organized.
Yeah, Diane, what you describe is a typical problem of democratic government. It's not a unique case, but we know what you're saying. Thank you very much. We move on to Galena then. Laura Osborne, you wish to testify on that bill?
I'm sorry, not. I'm the moderator out here, but Harry Purdy would like to testify.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Harry Curry. The address is Galena, Alaska. I'm the Vice Mayor of the City of Galena. And a little bit of history before I go into the Council's position on this particular bill. A number of years ago, in the early 70s, as a matter of fact, Galena was a second-class city, and they chose to become a first-class city. And the main reason that was done was so that the school district could be operated and controlled by the citizens of Galena. And so for the past 16 years, the local school board here has effectively run the school district, and the city has effectively run the city. And if this bill goes through, the fact of the matter is that there might be initially one or two members on a borough assembly, but in fact, over the long run, the representation on the school board for this borough might only have one person representing the city of Galena, and those people who are interested in quality education would have a lesser voice in the operation of the school district than they currently do. So the city of Galena is not in favor, the council is not in favor of this bill.
Thank you, Harry. Any questions or comments? Representative Larson?
Sure. I'm sorry, and if I talk too much, just cut me off, please, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'm agreeing with what Harry had to say, because that's one of the same arguments that I used back in 1963 against the formation of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Basically, we said we had the Palmer Independent School District, and we did not want to become involved in a much larger area. We wanted to continue to handle our own local affairs. My only comment would be is that history proved me wrong, and I would think that history too might prove Harry wrong in this case?
If I might, Representative Larson, I might agree with you if we had roads out here that we could get back and forth to the meetings. But as you realize, in order to hold a school board meeting, it's going to have to be in one of the village sites. That might not be Galena, in which case the citizens of Galena would have a difficult time attending meetings and voicing their concerns over education.
Sure, and thank you for those comments.
Yep, thanks. We move on to Salcha. Offline in Salcha is Wayne Grimes there.
Yes, Wayne Grimes, 5230 Grimes Road, Salcha, Alaska. I'm opposed to House Bill 1. I presently live in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and I find, and many residents that live beyond the 20-mile radius of the city of Fairbanks, find that it's almost impossible to participate in any type of borough government without incurring great expense. And we have a road system here. Just made reference to the fact that they probably have to fly at great expense to them, and consequently they would lack any participation at all in the government of their schools. In looking at this bill, I think the state in the long run is going to lose a considerable amount of money. Number one, you're going to lose $10 million, according to your figures, two of the five boroughs that would be incorporated along the pipeline, and that's being based on four-mill rate. There has been no consideration given whatsoever to what it's going to cost to operate a borough. You're looking at probably at least another four mills, so in fact, you're probably going to lose $20 million. And if I had anything to do about it, it would probably be even more than that, because I would exempt the first $50,000 on personal residence fees, and then increase the millage to even higher if we were forced to go into that kind of situation. You're also going to lose $10.2 million in transitional funds over the next 3 years. And it's going to be an unknown amount of money lost to DCRA and assisting these new boroughs, setting up areas that need to be surveyed in property titles and such. You're going to lose $1 million for the transfer of land, so I would strongly question that figure. I think it would be considerably more, but having to survey the lands at the cost of the RDA would be quite expensive. The tax and license fees under the shared revenue, you're going to lose $3.2 million. You miss municipal assistance, you're going to lose $6.1 million. Under the tax resource equalization account, you're going to lose between $1.4 and $4.1. I would estimate it probably more of a 4.1 figure. So consequently, on a yearly basis, the state stands to lose $33.4 million in transitional funds. You're going to lose $11.2 million over a three-year period. And what are the savings in here? I tried to locate that, and there are different figures listed in there, running anywhere from $13 million to $5 million. I'm not sure which figure this is. This is on Table 5. Of the memorandum, it says finances are proposed for Plattsboro school districts and shows a change in state rate of $13,444,000. And on Table 6, finances of school districts formed by combining school districts with the surrounding REAA areas show the savings of $5,669,000. So I'm not sure if you combine these two together or if one or the other is in fact the actual savings to the state. Somebody had mentioned the inability of people to pay. There's a lot of literature and material that show that to be in favor of that thinking. I would be much more supportive of an income tax of 2 to 3% with no deductions and using line 22 of the IRS Form 1040. There should also be no exceptions from that. At the present time, you've got two REAAs that are totally exempt. With no taxable income, those being ADAC and looking at the figures here, it appears to me that the state is subsidizing these two areas that cannot be taxed to the tune of over $3 million. $3.6 million that we're subsidizing the federal government here. I would seriously question as to why are we subsidizing the federal government to that tune? And why we can't get the federal government to support more of their share. We also have quite a few military installations that are surrounded by larger cities, and they get schools on their bases. Are we getting a proportionate amount of money from the federal government in support of the people that they're bringing in here? Or are the local economies that are presently being taxed at a disproportionate rate and being subsidizing military dependents who are here in support of their spouses? If, in fact, an income tax should come out, there should be no exemption whatsoever of anyone. At the present time, I do a lot of business on a military basis. And it used to be you could drive on the base, and I used to be in the military. I spent 21 years there, and I retired. It used to be you could rarely see an out-of-state or an Alaska tag on military installation because everybody maintained their own place of residence. At the present time, that's not so. It's rare to see an out-of-state tag. Everybody has an Alaska tag. They declare Alaska their home. Three reasons. Number one, we have no income tax. Two, we have very low vehicle registration fees. Number three, they can obtain the different funds. I have a son-in-law whose father, he's in the military too. He's still in the military. He's been declaring Alaska as a state of residence. He has no intention whatsoever to come back. And I think we're going to see more and more of that as we move on. But I think possibly the income tax would deter some of this along the way.
Well, thank you very much. You obviously did a lot of reading and thinking, and we appreciate that. The income tax in an election year, boy, that's a really a hot item. So we appreciate your thought anyway.
The federal government now is so far in debt, it's pathetic, and it makes me sick. I just wrote Senator Murkowski the other day about that. And we need to come to grips with this. We need to control our spending. And I see this bill as nothing but a runaway spending bill that's going to cost the state directly quite a few dollars, and indirectly it's going to cost the residents of areas that are going to be incorporated into boroughs substantially more, because there's no way you're going to create a bureaucracy without having to pay for it.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from the committee?
Yeah, my only comment was kind of in a form of information. School districts like ADAC, of course, are almost 100% funded through the PL-874 funding. That's federal dollars that come to the state of Alaska in lieu of the local property taxes in those areas. So that where there are federal dependents, there is federal money that comes along to help to educate them.
Well, for ADAC, you show roughly $1.8 million under PL-81-874, and the state foundation aid contribution is almost $2.4 million.
That's correct, but I'm saying a substantial part does. And I think this gentleman brings up an important point. I've always questioned whether ADAC should be one of the 55 school districts in Alaska, because it's 99% military students and the other 1% belongs to the teachers who teach there.
Right. And why is the state subsidizing the federal government?
That's a legitimate question.
And I think that goes on all around the state where you do have military installations here in the Fairbanks area. We have several thousand military dependents that are going on base to military schools, and they're being subsidized through the local taxes. And I don't think that's fair, not at all.
Thank you very much. Any more questions here? No, thank you. Is there anybody out in a phone booth where it's blowing and snowing on, and the dogs are trying to come in? Or we take them next?
This is A.T. McDonald from Indiana. Am I on?
Yeah, go ahead, Nana.
Okay, this is A.T. McDonald. I'm calling from the Indiana area. I live in a pretty unorganized portion of the unorganized borough. We don't have home phones. So I'm calling from a payphone on the west side of the Park Highway. You may remember last week I called from a payphone on the east side of the Park Highway. And come down on one side of the highway or the other. But I got some new information and would like to testify. Would that be okay?
Yeah, go ahead, as long as you're on the west side.
Okay. I just finished reading Ken Oakley's House Research Agency Report 88A, and quite a bit of my testimony will be based on that. One point I would like to make is that she introduces her paper with deciding that boroughs could not be expected to form immediately upon statehood, and that some areas would be not be financially or otherwise ready to organize for some years. The framers of the Constitution mandated that the state would be divided into boroughs, organized and unorganized. She she closes that summary with, as a political subdivision, the unorganized borough may be thought of as a holding tank for communities that are not yet joined together to form a local area-wide government. I think that, yeah, the Constitution is pretty easy to read, and it's kind of short. I'm just going to go ahead and read the section. This is Article 10, Section 3. The entire state shall be divided into boroughs, organized and unorganized. They shall be established in a manner and according to standards provided by law. The standards shall include population, geography, economy, transportation, and other factors. Each borough shall embrace an area and population with common interests to the maximum degree possible. The legislature shall classify boroughs and prescribe their powers and functions. Methods by which boroughs may be organized, incorporated, merged, consolidated, reclassified, or dissolved shall be prescribed by law. You'll notice that there's no talk of a holding tank or putting some sort of time limit on the unorganized borough. Gordon Harrison's Alaska Constitution, A Citizen's Guide, says, also by implication, boroughs in those areas with insufficient population, wealth, or other prerequisites for local self-government are to remain unorganized. Alaska statute simply says, this is section 2903.010, areas of the state that are not within the boundaries of an organized borough constitute a single unorganized borough. Again, no talk of a holding tank or time limit. Of our Constitution and the legislators responsible for 2903.10 felt that large areas of the state were not suitable for incorporation into organized boroughs. Why, you might ask, is there so much interest in a mandatory borough act on the part of some Department of Community and Regional Affairs employees and some urban legislators? I believe Community and Regional Affairs would like to form the 17 or 20 new boroughs for a number of reasons. It would simplify the state's dealing with large, sparsely populated areas that currently have no central government. And it would be the biggest bureaucratic bonanza for them since the pipeline. But I believe that the underlying reason for those for their relentless push for more boroughs is a sincere belief that more government is always better. Many of us non-state employees simply don't share that belief. Why does certain urban legislators keep pushing for more boroughs? I think it's because of a widely held belief among their constituents that residents of the unorganized borough are enjoying a free lunch with regards to educational expense. The residents of the unorganized borough currently pay no property tax, receiving 100% of their educational costs from the state. At first glance, it would seem that if rural residents were taxing themselves, there would be more state money left over for the current organized boroughs. Like so many things in government, first glance may not be right. The formation of the 17 to 20 new boroughs and the maintenance of these new boroughs would be very costly. 51% of the taxable value of the unorganized borough is the pipeline, but the state currently taxes the pipeline at 20 mils, so each dollar the new borough taxes the pipeline reduces state general fund revenues by $1. 36% of the taxable value of the unorganized boroughs within first class or home rule cities. They are already required by law to contribute their 4 mil equivalent, so no new revenue would be generated by their incorporation into a borough. This leaves 13% of the taxable value of the unorganized borough that is currently untaxed. A little less than 0.02% of the state's taxable value is currently going untaxed. To go after that money, House Bill 1 would be setting up 17 or 20 new boroughs. Research Agency Report 88A looks into this problem at some length and concludes on page 74. This analysis of the finances of the proposed borough dispels the commonly held notion that borough formation requires substantial sums to be raised locally and that there is a financial disincentive to borough formation. In fact, the converse is true. Under current laws governing the transfer of state funds to local governments, most areas of the unorganized borough would benefit financially from organization. That some of these areas have not yet organized, despite the financial incentive to do so, suggests either that people are not aware of the financial benefits of organization or that people do not want to organize. Based on this analysis, the generally slow development of the boroughs and the unorganized boroughs should probably be attributed more to sociological than financial facts. If these new boroughs were to benefit financially, you can be sure that the current boroughs would just be getting a smaller slice of the already shrinking state pie. Here's what the report says about the effect of borough formation on state revenues and expenditures. In the long run, the state would have decreased revenues under House Bill 1. It is difficult to predict how much state revenues will decrease over a long term, but if the new boroughs along the pipeline levy a 4 mil property tax and fish harvests remain about the same, revenues will be initially reduced $13 million. If the pipeline borough level taxes at a higher rate, revenues will be further reduced. The value of the pipeline is expected to decline during the next several years, and the formation of new boroughs along the pipeline will further reduce state revenues from this source, particularly if those boroughs raise taxes to stabilize revenues. The report assumes the new pipeline boroughs would only tax the required 4 mils, but since the pipeline's taxable value is vastly larger than the rest of the borough, as is the case in the North Slope borough, it would only be logical to tax it at the maximum allowable rate, as the North Slope borough does. A 4 mil tax by the new boroughs would take over $10 million each year from the general fund, but 18.3 mil, like the North Slope does, would cost the general fund over $50 million per year. Yet these new boroughs would still receive millions of dollars annually in entitlement programs such as public school foundation, municipal assistance, and revenue sharing programs. There would also be the initial transitional assistance as well as municipal land grants. And don't forget the couple million dollars the Community and Regional Affairs and DNR wants to set this all up. Like all government cost estimates, you can assume that things will end up costing more than these original estimates. By now, I hope that you're wondering if this is accurate, and if it is, why on earth would the organized borough want to be forced the rest of the state into organizing? You folks may be wondering why the residents of the unorganized borough are fighting House Bill 1. Indeed, why aren't we just lining up at the public trough? I, for one, look at the fact that the taxable value of the pipeline is scheduled to decline 10% per year for the next 5 years and wonder who's going to pay for it all. It could easily take 5 years to implement this foolish scheme, but 5 years from now, over one half of the taxable value of the current unorganized borough, which is the pipeline, will be worth less than one half of what it now is. The numbers we're looking at now will be meaningless, yet if we're stuck with 17 or 20 new boroughs, each chock full of expensive new buildings to heat and maintain, and each chock full of highly paid employees, who's going to foot the bill? What happens if each year brings in 10% less borough revenue? Talk about crying for municipal assistance. Hundreds of a percent of the state's total full taxable value is currently going on tax. Let's look at this slice of the pie. This sliver of the state's $55.8 billion pie is worth $0.8 billion. Taxing it at 4 mils would raise only $3.6 million per year. This would be the only new revenue raised by the creation of 17 or 20 new boroughs. All of the other money being discussed is already flowing into Juneau. But it gets worse. This foundation formula says that the very rich and the very poor boroughs won't pay their 4 mils. Plus, each borough is allowed senior citizen and residency exemptions. So even ignoring the administrative expenses and the collection problems, only a tiny fraction will get collected. Let's be generous and say that $2.5 million new dollars will get raised by our 17 or 20 new boroughs. Department of Community and Regional Affairs airline bills will exceed that amount. Although House Research Agency Report 88A did a pretty good job, it did ignore the value of the nearly 1 million acres the new boroughs would be selecting. We're talking about the best 1 million acres that can be selected from state lands, and it's conservatively worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay, I probably talked too long, but let me just make a real quick philosophical point or two. In Alaska's urban and rural governments, the office notes, boroughs that cover extensive regions with dispersed settlements are likely to contain more diverse population groups with different service preferences and orientations toward government, and there is likely to be a greater degree of conflict or tension among them. The authors are addressing 13 existing boroughs, but think about the internal conflict that would be inevitable in these new boroughs. More importantly, think of the conflict of creating 17 or 20 new boroughs, some rich, some poor, some native, some white. Although only representing 15% of the people, these new boroughs would outnumber the existing boroughs. Think of the lobbying and politicking that would be going on in Juneau. Less than 5% of the state's population chooses to live outside of organized communities. But you can be sure that it's entirely voluntary. Don't create a new layer of bureaucracy under the excuse that we need it. We choose to live where we do. The idea of using home rule, potentially the most powerful form of borough government, to create an all-new weak borough government is backward thinking. To government planners, flexibility may be good, but to those who choose to live outside of such a flexible government, it's frightening. Many simply do not trust government, and the more flexible it is, the greater the worry, and the greater the fear. Okay, and then the last thought, the idea of letting Community and Regional Affairs draft these charters is like having the fox design the security system for your new hen house. All right, I'm shutting up now.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I think the phone booth on the west side is a lot more comfortable than last week's in the east side. But thanks a lot. Again, I think you did a lot of thinking and research on that, and we appreciate that. Any comments or questions, Mr. McDonald?
Just one last. Could I request a copy of the transcript for today's testimony, too, please?
Yeah, we know that you will get it. The proverbial saying, it's going to be in the mail.
You're from the government. You're here to help me.
Right. We always help Nana.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I jump over. Some people have been standing by for quite a while. I think we got online. Manly, Togiak, Cooper Bay, and Nome, and Fairbanks. I go to Fairbanks, then I go to Nome, and then we catch Manly, Togiak, and Hooper Bay. So go ahead, Fairbanks. Is Oscar Frank there?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Oscar Frank. I live here in Fairbanks, and I don't think REAs should be converted into third-class boroughs for the following reasons. Some of these areas out here are where there's high unemployment, the people have low income, and I don't know what the state government would do to tax those areas where there's a mixed economy. You have a subsistence-based economy and some cash where villagers may work during the summer as firefighting or maybe commercial fishing. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any comments, questions? No, thank you. Moves into to sunny Nome on the Bering Sea coast is Senator Plodgett there.
Thank you very much, Chairman Springer of the House Meeting and Regional Affairs Committee, and guests. For the record, my name is R.R. Bob Blodgett, Post Office Box 645, Teller, Alaska, 99778. I'm a retired Alaska State Senator. I was deeply involved in the legislation that was written and sponsored by one representing John Rader of Anchorage, the Mandatory Borough Act that I did not vote for. I voted against, and I subsequently introduced legislation calling it for its repeal, and I still would. And I still work for its repeal. I remember that August body today. It is ill-conceived and poorly written, had to be withdrawn and rewritten by the sponsor to see if he couldn't make a Pablo Picasso out of something that looks like my granddaughter would do at school. Now, the least government is the best government. We already have local home rule government within our cities of the first class and our cities of the second class throughout the unorganized borough. And quite frankly, I wish we had cities of the third and fourth class, because I assure you, that is the level of local home rule government that many of our second-class cities function at, even though they're officially second-class cities. Now, the legislature is our borough assembly of our unorganized borough. And I salute the legislature for the job that they have done and the job that they are doing for us. And as such, we do not have a monumental bureaucracy that will evolve with the organization of the REA school districts into third-class boroughs. It is creeping bureaucracy. It is Empire Building. It is ill conceived. It's foolhardy. The main tax base for a third-class borough, Bering Strait Seward Peninsula area, would be Nome, Alaska. The one man, one vote dictum of the United States Supreme Court, and therefore the school district, apportion on the basis of a one man, one vote formula, Nome would dominate our 15 REAA schools in a 64,000 square mile area. It's a lot of nonsense. I don't think Nome wants that. I know our people in the 15 villages don't want that. I have communicated with many, many, many of our people in a cross section of the Bering Strait School District area. Now then, let's talk about a tax base. And revenue is a problem. Let's realize it. The people in the metropolitan areas that are saddled with mandatory borough change their borough and their government to unification because they couldn't afford two layers of government. I feel that the state oil severance tax should be 30%. We've been had. And I see in the paper yesterday where one of the oil companies are dangling the carrot in front of us and saying with the proper price on oil and the proper tax base that we're going to spend $7 billion in the next 10 years. Tough political carrot. Crummy politics that don't like it. The oil companies are getting a free ride from our non-renewable resource. It's like taking candy away from a child. Now, it follows that this piece of legislation survives, I doubt seriously if it will. I believe that August body has our better judgment than to enact anything like I have for me. But if it does, I'm satisfied there will be a class action suit by the people in the unorganized borough of this state. Process in a court of law, and we will prevail. Make it clear to the Supreme Court of the United States. There's been very good presentation here today, for which I am most grateful. Mr. McDonald has worked very diligently and done his homework extremely well, and I salute him. God bless you. The Department of Regional and Community Affairs, the Department of Transportation Public Facilities, and the REAA school districts, I feel, do quite well. Now, there's always room for dressing up or sharpening, if I may, the leading edge in any organizational structure. The economy out here, we export a few fish, most of which are taken by outsiders, and they're exported to primarily the Asiatic sector of the Pacific Rim. Empty convex containers, cargo containers, and snowbird paychecks that are mailed outside don't even go through the banks here. Just put them in the mail and mail them home. They're trying to see if the sleeping bagger workers that come up here like the carpet baggers did in the Deep South after the Civil War. One other export that we have a very real dearth of are retired state and federal employees. Now, I recognize that this is, to very frank, perhaps somewhat blunt. Do not mean to necessarily offend anyone, and if any of you people that have heard my few cogent remarks are offended, I extend my humble apology. And I thank you for the courtesy to participate. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too, Bob. Also from your old buddy Harrison. He's hanging in down here. Just wanted to add, we're working pretty hard too and trying to do our homework. Please send God blessings on this committee too. We need it. Any questions from the committee or any remarks? Thanks a lot, Bob. I'm sorry I missed you last Monday, but I was in and out pretty fast.
I was tied up in the BOT.
That's all right. We got to prepare for those flights to Providencia. Next is Mary Nodal.
Good afternoon, Henry, and the rest of you gentlemen. This is Mary Kennodal, Box 262, Nome, Alaska. I'm a member of the Nome School Board, but I'm speaking mainly for myself. I do oppose House Bill 1 creating a borough in an area that is so sparsely populated but has so many miles would create a great deal of just logistic problems. If you have an assembly board that has from 5 to 35, the number that was used earlier, members, getting people together just to meet to discuss the problems and the needs of the organized borough would be almost impossible. The tax base for the Bering Straits RAA right now and the proposed borough for our area is very limited. Most of that comes from the Nome area. As a taxpayer in Nome, I don't look favorably at paying more taxes to help support a much larger area. We have enough needs here and not enough tax money to take care of those needs. I do understand that there is problems with the equity in school funding, but I think that creating more problems with the borough system is probably not the way to go. We've got enough government. More government creates more positions, more jobs, but it also costs more money. And if we don't have that money, then there's no point in creating these jobs. That's really all I have, and I thank you for listening.
Thank you. Representative Larson has a question or comment.
Yeah, Mary, I made the comment, I guess, that the borough assembly size could be from 5 to 35. I would hope, of course, that the size of an assembly would never get greater than, say, 9 to 11 members.
Even with 9 to 11 members, you know, getting, if we're going to have representatives from as many from an area that is as big as ours, getting them into one spot because of weather is nigh on close to impossible. I mean, it's just hard to get everybody together to do things that are constructive.
Sure, and I'm sure that's the same problem with your school board at this time in REA districts. Maybe not yours in the city of Nome, but in REA districts, you know, we recognize that concern.
Carl there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Go right ahead, lay it upon us.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Polly Percale. I'm the city manager of Nome. Address of Nome is Post Office Box 281, Nome, Alaska, 99762. For the record, the city of Nome, Alaska, opposes House Bill Number 1 for a number of reasons in doing to the draft of it. First of all, in Section 1, the Local Boundary Commission, now realizing that this is a gubernatorially appointed board, it is badly named to call it a Local Boundary Commission, and that they are the ones designated to tell us what the size of the borough should be it the Bering Strait REAA size as first proposed in SSHB1, or what shall now be the new borough for the area surrounding Nome. It also says there will be one hearing in the area. I propose that the people of Nome and the surrounding area should have far more input and probably have the talent and the intelligence to lay out the proposals for their own boundaries. It says that the Department of Community and Regional Affairs shall deliver to the governor a home rule charter proposed, and that they should, again, have one public hearing in the area, at least one. I propose that probably the area could write its own home rules charter. Maybe they don't want home rule. Maybe they'd rather be a first-class borough. So down through there, I find that what is stated in Article 10, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution, borough, it says that the state shall be divided into boroughs, organized and unorganized. I leave you with a proposition, gentlemen, that unorganized boroughs, which may be territory delineated by a line on a map, leave it alone. We don't need the second level of government. We don't have the tax base to pay for anything else. We've got troubles enough with just the city, the services that we're trying to provide here. We cut down the Nome National Forest last year to do a couple of studies that were already mandated up here. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Polly. We appreciate your input. Here is Representative Larson has something.
Sure. Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to take a little different philosophy here. Here we have a hired gun. We don't have a citizen from the community speaking. From Polly's information that he gave us, of course, he read the parts of the bill that he thought favored him, and he conveniently left out many other parts of the bill that would have answered the questions that he was asking the committee to consider. And as for the Local Boundary Commission, that's provided for in the Constitution. That's the commission that's appointed by the governor, and that's the commission which, in the bill, would make recommendations as to what the boundaries could be. It says there should be at least one. It doesn't say that there can't be one or 10 or 20 or 25, either for the formation of the boundaries or for what all should be consistent in a home rule borough. What I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is that we set the minimum standards, but he knows, and all the rest of us know, that that's all it is the minimum standards, and there would be much more done than what he's leading us to believe.
Mr. Chairman, may I speak?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Representative Larson, I truly agree with you. I am a hired gun. And by the way, I happen to be a woman. I'm sorry about that. However, what I want to draw your attention to, Representative Larson, the idea of an unorganized borough. Now, my home state happens to be South Dakota. And in my home state, we have unorganized counties, which are large rural areas that are attached to the closest type of government next to them. They are unorganized. Yes, they have a name on the map, but there is no elected official, there's no borough assembly, call it what you will. But that area is attached to the next level or local officials. And it would be highly possible, if you look at Nome and look at the area around us, that we may have an unorganized borough around us. But have, there may be a few cabins in there or a few summer miners. Let the city of Nome remain the city of Nome, and instead of being outside of borough, let us be the city of Nome within an unorganized borough of our choosing.
I'm going to have to apologize to you, Polly, and I also want to say you just gave us a new concept here, something that I hadn't heard of before, and I'd very much appreciate if you simply send to Box V, Juno 99811, the information that you mentioned in relation to your home state. Thank you.
Certainly. The Sioux Indians will be delighted to help you.
Okay, thanks a lot. My records indicate that's it in Nome from people who want to testify. Is that correct?
Yes, Reverend Springer, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. We go back to the Windy Off system participants. Let's go to Manly Hot Springs. I have four people showing here wanting to testify. Lisa Burnett, Charles Dart, and S. Hollingsworth, and Pamela Reddington. Let's just proceed in that order. Is Lisa Burnett there?
Yes, my name is Liza Renee, and my address is Manly Hot Springs, Alaska, 99756. And I'm the president of Manly Hot Springs Community Association, a non-profit organization in the unincorporated community of Manly Hot Springs in the unorganized borough in the state of Alaska. First, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to give testimony on the second draft of sponsor substitute of House Bill 1. It's not often that we're allowed to give such direct input, and it is genuinely appreciated. Although this is my personal testimony, I would like to relate the concerns brought forth by the public at a January 7th, 1988 general meeting of the Manly Hot Springs Community Associations. The ideas expressed at this meeting and subsequently are as follows. One, it was felt that prior to the mandatory organization of boroughs, a thorough study should be made of the areas involved. This study would include past, present, and future economic information, a resource database, and input from every village and school district. We realized that a report containing some of these things was presented to the legislature this year by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, but as we stated in our testimony on the draft of this rural government study, we felt that this was not an accurate or fair portrayal of the situation, and certainly not thorough enough for the proposals being made in House Bill 1. Two. Furthermore, the opportunity to incorporate is already provided by the state constitution and Alaska statutes, and there are good reasons why certain areas of the state have remained unorganized. These should also be thoroughly investigated and considered prior to legislation such as you are proposing. For example, in the interior, estimates of the value of taxable property in the unorganized borough are based in many instances on the presence of the pipeline running through the region. Our concern is what happens after the pipeline is no longer a sufficient source of revenue. This question has not been adequately addressed and is of utmost importance to everyone in the rural areas. According to the regional government study, the unemployment rate in our area is 17%, and the average yearly per capita income is about $9,500. Although fisheries, mining, and timber may have resource value in other areas, these small industries are already struggling to survive in the interior. None of these options offer a viable economic base for a borough. Three, adding more boroughs to the government system would only contribute to the layers of bureaucracy and government spending. How many boroughs in existence are now economically stable and provide their residents with the services they are required to render? If the bottom line is more equitable school funding, it is strongly felt that there are other alternatives that are just as legitimate as borough formation, and we should concentrate on these. Other possible options might include the reinstatement of the state income tax, permanent fund foundation for education, sales tax in the unorganized borough, tax on alcohol and cigarettes dedicated to education, or the return of the $10 school tax. Four, if as the regional government study reports, 93.7% of the residents of the state are already encompassed within municipalities, and 80% of the population of the unorganized borough lives within a municipal government, why then is borough organization now considered necessary or mandatory for such a small remaining percentage of the population, and at what cost? We cannot agree that local control would be better served by government bureaucracy being imposed upon us. In conclusion, because of the fact that little consideration has been given to studying the economic viability of borough organization, because of the fact that the task of organization has been taken out of local control and given to the Boundary Commission, and because there is no vote allowed to the people as to whether or not they want to form a borough or whether or not they want to be annexed into existing borough, and because the charter is being written by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs with minimal local input, we emphatically do not support the second draft of sponsor substitute House Bill 1. And also, we'd like to request a copy of last week's testimony and this week's testimony be sent to the Manly Hot Springs Community Association, Manly, Alaska, 99756. Thank you.
Thank you for your concise and well thought out testimony. Any remarks, Representative Larson?
Sure. That was going to be my comment, Mr. Chairman. I very much appreciate the testimony that was just given, and I very much appreciate the statement, of course, that we have to have an educational process, and that has to be evolutionary, in which more information is gathered as we go along.
Thank you. Charles Stark, next, please.
Yes, I'm Charles Dart, Manly Hot Springs, Alaska, 99756. I won't repeat many of the arguments that have been very well put forth. There are a couple of things I would like to add. In Manly Hot Springs, we turned down in 1978 by a vote of 2-1 that was supervised by the Community and Regional Affairs for a local government entity. I would like to comment that the study that was made for you seems to me to be grossly inadequate. It was slanted and erroneous, and it squandered the state's money. I'm concerned about the basic motivation for the legislation for this converting the IEAs to boroughs. Why isn't the Constitution followed by the legislature on the establishment and maintenance of education? And I do commend almost and agree with most of the testimony that's already been given to the different speakers. Thank you.
Thank you. Just for clarification, when you refer to that biased and erroneous study, are you referring to the document that was prepared by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs or the documents prepared by legislative research?
I'm not sure. I don't have it with me. It was the one that came earlier, right at the when there was so brief a period of time to submit to any, testimony.
Yeah, okay, that was last November, December. That was the one from Department of Community and Regional Affairs, I would assume.
Well, it was done by a hired outfit for
the Community and Regional Affairs, I believe. To me, it was just a waste of money. It was a waste of funds. It was just a waste of money. It was just a waste of funds. It was just a waste of money. It was just a waste of funds. It was just a waste of money. It was just a waste of funds. It was just a waste of money. It was just a waste of money. We squandered the money through government then, not through outside influence, because it was an in-house product. So it was spent by the bureaucrats among themselves. In your other statement, I'm interested. You say that why we are not following the Constitution or are violating the Constitution. Can you expand a little bit on that? It would interest me.
Well, doesn't the Constitution say there's a brief clause in the Constitution that says that the state of Alaska shall establish and maintain an educational system? Is that not true?
Yes, that's true, and I fail to understand how a sponsor substitute on House Bill 1 violates that.
Well, it seems to me the motivation is to get the rural areas to contribute to the educational system as the organized cities and boroughs are doing. It would be my interpretation that the state should fund the educational system in total. I can see where people in cities and boroughs resent the fact that they are paying to contribute to the educational system, and the unorganized boroughs residents are not paying anything. But to me, you're approaching the problem from the wrong angle. It's incredible to think that anybody feels that there is the resources to support the educational system anywhere near comparable to what is done in the concentrated residential areas.
Okay, thank you. Well, personally, I don't detect a violation of the Constitution, but you're certainly right. You can address the demand for education and the corresponding problems with funding. You can draw up a whole bunch of different schemes. That's certainly right. And if your opinion is that it is a state obligation on the broader space and that all of it should be directly paid for by the state, that is certainly an opinion that exists. Any questions or comments to Mr. Dart? Thank you very much.
You also ignored the property tax that was levied in 1948, and was repealed because it was so costly to, and it cost more to collect than it brought in.
Are you referring to that report didn't mention? Is that what you mean?
No, it hasn't been mentioned at all, to my knowledge, either by the committee or in the report.
Okay, thank you. Now, just for your information, I'm taking at this point a neutral role on it, and all the committee is doing still is taking public testimony so we can hear what everybody has to say. And for example, we have had today two things that were new in the hearing process, and that's what we're doing. We're as a committee, we have not formed an opinion, we have not made any recommendations, and we will do so diligently after we have had extensive hearing, which we have. I think one thing nobody can accuse us of is that we are getting blindsided and not making every attempt to get everybody's opinion incorporated in the committee's records. Representative Herman has a comment or question.
Yeah, I have a comment on this bill. You know, I think it might be a little bit better than the first bill, but I'm still not in agreement with it. And I think, you know, that bringing in testimony to the committee is good. I think that people out in the rural areas have a lot of good ideas, because they're going to be experiencing some of the concerns that this bill is going to put forth. So, you know, I've made up my mind. I don't agree with this bill, and, you know, so I just wanted to mention that to people that that I have a lot of concerns on this bill, and I think it's just going to be a real detriment to rural Alaska, and I appreciate a lot of the testimony in that sense.
Okay, thank you. We have next S. Hollingsworth, please.
Yes, my name is Dick Hollingsworth, and I live
in Manly Hot Springs, Alaska, 99756. And a lot of the things have already been brought up that I had to say, but I lost my favorite song, but I will try not. First of all, I don't think that there's been much input from the unorganized residents, unorganized groups. And I don't think it's right that the Americans don't vote or they could support the state. And the Bush is not lucrative enough to have a tax base. I mean, can't really base this on the pipeline as draft report because the pipeline has its limited life. The draft report also says it's based on that was about to take over, but the this area plans to be burned through a regulation.
Ma'am, could you stop a second? You're breaking up really bad. You're coming on and off. Are you close enough to the mic, please?
I'm using my phone, yes. I'll try and not to... Excuse me, I will try not to break up again. Okay, do you want me to repeat anything, or have you heard what I said?
I think we had some difficulty towards the end. The last two sentences came in really broken.
Okay. I was saying that the Bush is not really lucrative enough to have a tax base because we can't really base it on the pipeline as the draft report did since the pipeline has a limited life. The draft report also said that fishing and mining are on an incline, which is quite the reverse in this area at any rate, due to EPA regulations and other things. And I just can't imagine what the tax base will be, really. Also, I think the public, if there is such a thing as the boroughs, I think the public should have an input in writing the charter. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of input, space for a lot of input there. And there already exists a format for forming boroughs. If an area wants one, they can certainly do that. And apparently, these areas have not felt that that would be beneficial to them. That's why they haven't formed one. I think also that public hearings should be held in either all the towns affected by the new boroughs or that would be annexed into existing boroughs, or at least within, say, a 100-mile radius, you know, because it travel is expensive and it's very hard for most people to travel and, you know, get to another place to give their views. I think this format is wonderful, and maybe that's something that could be used also for public hearings. As far as elections, it doesn't seem like it didn't really say how much time would be allotted for the general public to review the charters before elections, and there definitely would need to be enough time to really thoroughly go over that and propose amendments. And according to the study, it seems like, to that announcement that we got, it seems like there was not going to be enough time to really do that properly. That really concerns me. I also agree that there are other ways to maintain the schools. I think that if the government, you know, this way is just too expensive, the government's going to put more money into forming and maintaining the boroughs than it can collect the taxes. And we could either go to the old school tax or maybe a percentage of permanent fund interest or something that we could slate for schools would be, I think, a much more direct way of doing it. And I just feel that this whole issue has been shut down our throats with little warning and little input from those affected. And I'm very pleased to have a chance to say something now, and I appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Only comment I have is the very fact that we are talking to each other should convince you that we are not trying to shove anything down anybody's throat. We've been working now a full season on it, and we are not finished. And so I don't think that is the case. I know there are four or five more people in Manly that want to testify. We have only 13 minutes left. I would like to give the two people in Togiak and Hoover Bay a chance to be heard, and then in the remaining time I go back to Manly, okay? Is Moses Kritz or Kreitz in Togiak available, please?
Thank you. This is Togiak. Tolyak. I'm a council member, city council member here in Tolyak, and our box number is 99 Tolyak, Alaska 99678. I'm definitely opposed to House Bill number 1, and the majority for our Tolyak, their indication is that they're opposed to the formation of the boroughs, especially in the rural parts of Alaska. And I agree with all of the people that have testified previous to me. And one of the reasons why we are against this is back in 1967 that Tolyak formed a special class city. And it's been about 15 to 20 years, took us 15 to 20 years to understand what the heck city government is. And now we're starting to understand how we're going to go about now state of Alaska is imposing a borough system to rural communities. And we don't agree with what's going on. And to run this type of a government, we will need high-caliber, educated people to run this sort of a government. And the other thing that the people are objecting to is the taxing of different, different, for instance, property taxes for our people. And we don't have that kind of money to pay taxes. And, a lot of our people don't understand what the state of Alaska is trying to do in terms of, forming boroughs in rural communities.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? There are none, thank you. We move on to Hooper Bay. Is James Knight there?
Yes, good afternoon, this is James Knight. With me here to testify is Mark Springer. I have to meet Mark Springer here.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
My name's Mark Springer. My address is Box 13, Hooper Bay. Been a resident of Alaska since about 1976, and I recall the last major push by the legislature that was of a proportion like this affecting rural Alaska was an attempt around 1977 to place a property tax on the unorganized borough. I was living at Tope Junction at the time, and we kind of ran a legislative hearing out of town over that. The Alaska Constitution, in its second paragraph, clearly points out that political power in this state originates with the people. It's my opinion that legislation of this type is an attempted usurpation by the legislature of the of the legitimate and true sovereignty of the people of Alaska. I feel that if the legislature wants to make a positive contribution to local government in rural Alaska, they should attempt to nurture the political evolution that's going on out here. I think they should continue to revise Title 29 and even consider some amendments to the state constitution to recognize smaller, already existing forms of government. There's a little bit of a parallel between the unorganized borough property tax that the legislature wanted a few years ago and this bill here, which basically is trying to get the local areas to pick up some of the freight on education. We just got a copy of a report from Community Regional Affairs, a proposed borough right here on the coast, from Monarch down here to Hooper and ways up to Yukon. It says in there that with a 2% sales tax, the 12 communities in this proposed borough would be making around $230,000 a year in revenue. And after 5 years, they ran the numbers 5-6 years down the line. After about 5 years, the borough would be having to pay in this share of education close to $500,000. So if you sit down and you really think about it, you're reasonable about it, the percentage of education funding that would be picked up by the new boroughs would really be marginal in relation to the cost that these new local governments would face in raising the revenue. Now, I let me just kind of wrap this up because I know time's short and there's probably some other people that want to talk. But this indicates kind of a trend that's coming out of, that seems to be coming out of Judo, out of the legislature. I know you, Representative Springer, and other of our rural representatives and senators are fighting this all you can, and by golly, we appreciate the job you're doing, and I know we're going to beat it. A city acquaintance of mine that observed a few years ago, he said, you know, a few years ago, we all had bumper stickers on our rigs that said, we don't give a damn how they do it on the outside. But things have changed. Things have changed. Now every time you turn around, somebody in the government is saying, oh, this is the way they do it outside. Let's try it that way. And I just briefly like to also echo and commend the comments that Senator Blodgett made earlier this afternoon. Very, very excellent presentation, and I think quite safely from the reactions of the people that were in the room here that included members of the village council, the traditional council, and also the city council, they were in full agreement with what he said. And I think there's a couple of city employees sitting here, and I think I'm correct in saying that the city of Hooper Bay is opposed entirely to House Bill 1, as is the traditional council also. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Is there anybody else there from Hooper Bay that wanted to say anything?
No comment.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions or remarks from Representative Larson?
Well, I just had a final remark when everyone's had an opportunity to be heard.
Yeah, we still got some people in Manly I want to get back on. Thank you, Mark. Okay. Is there anybody else out there other than from Manly Hot Springs that hasn't had a chance to be heard?
Yes, there is one person in Galena.
Okay, well, we were in Galena, but we can go back there. They only had one voice there. She should have more. Go ahead, Galena.
This is Carol Huntington. I'm president of our local school board. I'd like to go on record as opposed to House Bill 1. I think that this should be an option initiated by the local people or the district area, not something that shows down our throats. Galena is satisfied with its first-class city status. It's a very independent community. The city currently contributes $4.5 million to our school budget. The rest of the communities around us do not have a tax base. You can't squeeze blood from a turnip. But if we have the financial incentives of a few oil wells or mineral mines in our backyard, then we could reconsider. But then again, it should be up to us to decide on home government. The local government is, local control is strong, it's well and it's flourishing in Galena. Why change it? We have a quality education system in Galena, we want to make sure it stays that way. And opposed to the duplicate government system, there's a lot of rationale for that. We don't have time to go into that. Our local government works for us, we want to keep it that way. Amen.
Okay, thank you. I hate to cut any testimony short, and I try to arrange that those people that haven't been heard have an opportunity to be heard. And of course, we accept gladly written testimony, even if it's condensed and short. If you want to send it to the CRA committee, Box V, in Juneau, 99811, we gladly included in the record. We got a few minutes left, and I know I had Pamela Reddington and Steve Fortelny from Manly Hot Springs still there, and maybe some others. Maybe a couple short statements from Pamela and Steve, and then we see where we stand time-wise. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Please identify yourself.
Okay, this is Steve Fortelny. I'm calling from Manly Hot Springs School, and I just want to go on record as being opposed to the House bill. I don't think that it's going to get us any services. Being in a borough, I lived in Fairbanks for a while, but then I moved out here just to kind of get away from that, and. I don't, any services will be provided other than the school, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that the state's constitution allows for the state to deal with the school system as opposed to a borough. And it looks to me like the only reason this is coming down is to get a borough organized so there can be a property tax. And from my point of view, there isn't really a tax base out here other than property tax, and a lot of people that live out here are on very much a subsistence level, and there isn't that much. I think a tax would be quite harmful to them.
Thank you, Steve. Is Pamela Reddington still standing by? Okay, apparently not. We have time for one more person in Manly. I think there are some other people there.
Oh. Yes, this is Damaris Mortbett, the teacher here at Manly Hot Springs School, and I'm giving my opinion as a citizen. I want to register my opposition to the House bill for the formation of the boroughs. I feel that it's just an unnecessary layer of government that would cost more to administer than it would net in revenues. That running boroughs costs money, and the tax base simply isn't in the bush for such taxation. I think the formation of boroughs is developmentally and economically unrealistic at this point. And Heidi, are you there to give your statement?
Ma'am, before you leave, we didn't catch your name. It just came in a scratch. Could you please repeat it?
Okay, my name is Damaris. That's Damaris. Last name, Mortbett. M-O-R-T-B-E-T. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, our time is up. I think Representative Larson wanted to have one short comment.
Sure. I guess my first comment is kind of in form of a public service announcement, but to Carol Huntington at Galena, a week from tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee will be meeting to consider that $2 million under the mitigating circumstances. And I know that Galena has a request for approximately $628,000 to help them with their problem. And I want to assure her that we are working on that, and hopefully at that time we can settle the situation so that it can help them in their financial problems that they're having this year. The only other comment I wanted to make, Mr. Chairman, is that I want to thank you and the committee. I think you have been very, very fair, offering both sides the opportunity to be heard in relation to this bill. And I guess to the general public, I'd like to say that I think we have an educational process going on. As I stated before, I do not believe that House Bill 1 in its present form will ever pass, or in any form will pass this year. However, I think this is a subject that is concern of all people of Alaska, whether they live in urban areas or whether they live in rural areas. And I think the forum that you have given us to carry this forth, I want to thank you very much for that. And a couple of other brief comments that I want to assure people that I agree that no tax is a good tax if it costs you more to collect it than you get from it. And we are aware of that situation. We're also aware that the Prudhoe Bay Curve and the pipeline isn't always going to be there. That's a problem not only of local government, but it's a problem of the state. So I look forward to continuing to work with the citizens throughout Alaska. I'm not an urban legislator. I'm not a rural legislator. I'm one of those that are caught some way in between who has a concern. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to thank everybody for what I consider today a very high-level participation. There were some very well-thought-out testimonies we received today. If there is somebody still out there that hasn't been heard, I invite you to call in, collect if you like. Ask for David Harrison or Martha Fishback. You can call 465-3789. We will accept a collect call and take your brief statement and make it part of the record. Thank you very much. We adjourn at 4:31.
I'll have to send you.